Thank you for tuning in to another episode of an Open Water Swimmers podcast. You may or may not know that I am endeavouring on my own set of ultramarathon swims this year and next. Clearly, compared to some of my incredible guests over these seasons, these events are relatively piddly. But nonetheless, I'm booked to swim the 65 kilometres around Jersey in September of 2023, and then I have my own English Channel solo attempt in August of 2024. I'm raising money for a charity called Amaze, who help families who have children with disabilities. They're based in Sussex. So if you're enjoying this podcast, please do head to my Just Giving page, which you can find on the blurb of the pod, or also if you go to my Instagram handle, OWSwimPod, it's there for you to find. Please donate anything at all. All donations are welcome, no matter how big or small. You can think of it, if you like, as just buying me a coffee. If you want to hear more about my story and why I am raising money for Amaze, then check out Intrepid Water and fellow swim podcaster Shannon Keegan and her interview with me back in May of 2022. Thank you. Enjoy the show.
I'm Kate Steeles, and you're listening to an Open Water Swimming podcast.
Welcome to this week's episode of Season 3, Episode 8 of an Open Water Swimmers podcast with me, Will Ellis. It's great to see so many of you engaging with the podcast on social media, so thank you for all your messages and comments. Just a reminder, the handles on Instagram and Twitter are at OWSwimPod, and of course, do leave me a rating with your podcast provider. Today's guest is basically superhuman. She completed the Triple Crown of Marathon Swimming. She was the third human to complete the Ice 7, an ice mile on all seven continents, was WOWSA Woman of the Year 2021, and was nominated again in 2022. She was inducted into the Ice Swimming Hall of Fame and is widely regarded as one of the toughest and most skilled ice swimmers on the planet. She's given so much to the sport, and it was a real honour to be able to hear her story. Please welcome to the podcast, Kate Steeles. So I'm absolutely thrilled to have Kate Steeles on the podcast, fresh from Ice Swimming Championships. Thank you so much for joining me this morning.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Great. Well, I'm going to dive straight in, Kate. So first question is very simply, why do you swim? Obviously, this is an Open Water Swimmers podcast, so not everyone might start their swimming journey in the open water, but why did you take up swimming? Why do you now continue to swim? And what is it about the open water, and I guess in your case, the really cold water, that keeps you coming back?
So I haven't always been a swimmer. I learned to swim when I was very young. My parents were their teachers, and I learned in a pool in one of the schools where my parents both taught. Then I swam with a club for about 15 months, that's all. I really enjoyed it. It was in Wiltshire, but I remember in the summer, it was an outdoor pool that we trained in and most people really hated it. And I used to have to cycle there. I remember my bike getting stolen from outside the swimming pool one day, which wasn't very good. And I also had to cycle past the slaughterhouse, which turned me vegetarian, and I'm still vegetarian to this day.
Wow.
But anyway, my parents then moved and we went to West Dorset, which I loved, but I was about 30 miles away from the pool. So that was the end of my swimming in a pool, really. I used to go kayaking after that and a little bit of swimming, certainly when I capsized. And then I moved around again, got work in Portsmouth, then moved again and ended up getting married, having my son, and then my marriage fell apart in 2008, very unexpectedly, and I wanted to do something different to make new friends, and every other weekend I didn't have my son, and I'd had two childhood dreams. I don't know why I had them, they seemed quite random. I didn't know swimmers, but I had a dream to swim the English Channel, and I had a dream to go to Antarctica. I'd still like to go to Antarctica, but now I want to swim in Antarctica, but I haven't got a sponsor for that yet.
Wow.
So in 2008, 2009, I joined Portsmouth Triathletes only so that I could go sea swimming every other Saturday morning. And I absolutely loved it. And I met a lot of people there. I was inspired by swimmers of similar ability to me at the time who had decided to do a charity channel relay. So after a lot of discussion, could I do it? Could I raise enough money to get a place? I decided to do that in 2011. I swam English Channel relay with Aspire. And that sort of planted a seed for my distance swimming. And then I met my partner and we went to, he introduced me to cold water at Tooting Beck. And I did my first competition. I came back with some medals from the winter swimming, but it was the distance I was after. And then I heard about the International Ice Swimming Association and I was already speaking to Ram Barkai. And to cut a long story short, I started training for my ice mile and did my first ice mile in 2015. And later that same year, I represented GB at the first ever Ice Swimming World Championships in Murmansk when first swim at 0 degrees.
Gosh, wow. There's a lot in there. Do you mind if I chart back to that moment? Tell me if this is too much of a personal question. That's absolutely fine. Do you mind if we chart back and I ask you, what was it about the water during that obviously uncomfortable time when a relationship breaks down? What was it about the water that sort of called you to that? Because often people talk about, you know, just doing an event, but obviously this being an open water swimmers podcast, I'm coming across people that find the water. Was there a specific draw to the water over anything else?
I've always loved the sea. Always. I live by the coast in West Dawson, did kayaking. Seas always naturally draw me, like mountaineers will talk about how they're drawn to mountains. And I'm drawn to all open water swimming now, but I started in the sea. I love the feeling. It's a place where I can be just me. And even more so now, more recently, it's just a place that I can escape and just be with one at nature. I love being outside in nature. I'm not a city person. And so to be outside, as long as conditions are safe in terms of weather and sewage outlet, unfortunately, it's just, I love the feeling of water against my skin and just being there in nature, salty and just, yeah.
Is there anything more mental and cerebral, I suppose, for being in the water than in your case, than, you know, climbing up a mountain? You know, assuming they're both solitary experiences, what is it then that the water gives us that being on a mountain doesn't?
I wouldn't say they're necessarily different. I think they can be social as well. I think, yes, you might have individual achievements, but it's often with the help of a team that you get there. And I'm talking about ultramarathon swims there. You do have a lot of people and you always have had, and maybe not the same numbers of swims, it's important to do most of your training with people. I think that part of it for me is a challenge as well. I like a challenge. And if you're a mountaineer and you want to climb Mont Blanc, you want to climb Everest, that's your challenge or whatever mountain it is for you. For swimming, it might be you want to do your first ever winter swimming open water. It might be you want to do your first ISA, 500 meters ISA, 1 kilometer competition or an ice mile, or you want to do a channel relay and then you build up into something different and then ultimately maybe aim at a channel solo. So the different themes, but I wouldn't say, I think that there's a lot of parallels in the approach.
Okay. That's interesting. And you said that when you had two dreams, one was to go to the Arctic and one was to swim. Now in my head, you've sort of combined those two things by your extremely cold swimming. Can you, for someone like me who, you know, anything below 15, you know, I start to get my heckles go up, should we say, and that's something I'm working on. But what's the deal for you with the cold? What does it do to you? And I'm not talking about sort of static immersion. I'm talking about, you know, the physical activity of being in the cold, of which you've done an extraordinary amount. What does it do to you?
At first, I used to get cold. And you still do get cold, but a different degree at a different time now. I get a big buzz from it. I think there's a lot being said about it. But for me, it's trying to do something different. It's trying to do something that people think you can't do. It's that challenge coming back. And to me, in the middle of a bleak winter, what is better than getting up early as soon as you can for suns and rises isn't too late and going out and finding somewhere wild, the local river, the beach, wherever, or Andart Lake, and getting in for a swim. To me, it's like you're getting at nature. You're at the best time of the day. You might hear whatever wildlife around. And, it, you know, you're only one swim away from a good swim. They're always good. They're always different.
Love it. I mean...
You know, people get up, and I swim with Winchester City Penguin Swimming Club now. And I get up 3 or 4 times a week to get in the pool at 6 a.m. You get used to doing that. But actually, yes, it's good training. I need it. I need it to try and make sure my technique's as good as it can be and trying to get some speed there. But my love, my heart is in open water.
Is the love in your heart, is that more drawn to cold water in the open water, or is it more drawn to any expansive water in the open water?
It's seasonal, and I'll even miss training for a heavy frost and everyone laughs, they're all queuing to get in the pool and it's still dark and they all say, no, she's not coming. It's going to be -4. She's going to the river because it's nice and frosty, so it's good training. but in the summer, I want to do ultra marathon distance, you know, like long swims, more than 10K. I do 10K twice a week in training in the sea. So it's very seasonal for me. And it's different. So, you know, if I'm training 2 or 3 times in the ice, it still takes quite a lot of the time. Whilst you go to the venue, you swim, then you have to recover and get warm and then, you know, fully warm, as it were, back to doing whatever else you were doing. And it's often much harder juggling with full-time work just because of the daylight hours in the middle of winter. But I also have an ice bath in the garden as well. So it takes time. Whereas in the summer, I can get up and I can get into the beach and start swimming at 5 a.m. and get a few hours in before work.
Oh, it's extraordinary. I'm a, you know, marathon swimmer and love the open water, just like all my guests. But there's something that scares me about the cold, and it's something I'm having to work on. I just bought an ice bath for my garden, one of those static Lumi ice baths, and I'm looking forward to it purely because I know that I'm only a step away from coming indoors and really warming up. But I think for me the idea of going to a venue and taking twice as long to warm up, the admin of getting back when you're cold, there is something romantic about that. I admit, but I think for me that's such a big obstacle compared to just having a dip and then getting warm, which is, I think, is the luxurious version. I'm sort of rambling here. I don't really know what I'm really asking. It's just the whole thing seems so wonderfully baffling to me, and I'm really trying to find. I'm really hoping to explore what the cold really, really brings, especially with someone like you, who's juggling ultra distance as well as having to acclimate. And it's not like you're going to swim the English Channel, which of course I know you've done. It's, you know, you're going into such extreme temperatures that acclimation is such, you know, is almost more important than the distance.
So if I'm going to where it's seriously cold, where it's 0 or 1. I mean, I personally, I think you can feel every single degree below 5. So swimming at 4 degrees is completely different to swimming at 0 or 1, because also the air temperature, that makes a difference. And if you're breathing in air, like at the World Championships, it was really mild at 6 or 7. That's completely different. Once you get down to near freezing or well below freezing, it's a really big difference. Every breath you take, that cold air on your lungs. So if I'm going somewhere that I know it's going to be really cold, like parts of China or Russia, I try and go to Snowdonia and do some training there and stay there and then hike up to the smallest lakes and tarns that I can find just before they're frozen over. I go with my partner. We swim one at a time for safety. We always swim within our limits. And that's the other thing. I think it's really important than the after drop that your body will be much colder 10 to 20 minutes after you get outside of the water. So if we're in remote places, it's more little and often. So I might not stay in the water, you know, might stay in 12, 15 minutes, but I'm not going to stay in longer if I'm up a mountain. And if conditions are really bad, I'll reduce it. It's really important. And, you know, and to me, if you go and do a week, 10 days in Snowdonia, that sort of training, it's excellent preparation.
Yeah. Well, it would seem so. To me, it's incredible. It just sounds like purgatory at the moment to a layman like me. It's astonishing, really. I had a guest on, I'm sure you know, Caroline Saxon, who suggested, and this is totally alien to me, who suggested that for her, anything below, I think she might have said 8 or 7, sort of to her feels the same. That's obviously not something you identify with based on what you just said. And everyone has a different experience, I guess.
No, I think she's right. But the reason I said 5 is because that's the 5.0 degree is what we call ice swimming and below.
Okay.
So 7 and 8, you do feel it drop below 10. But the temperatures that personally I don't excel as well as other people is sort of 10, 11, 12, possibly 13, which is quite unusual.
Yeah. So you feel more uncomfortable around 10, 11 than you do anything lower?
Relative to other people. So
Okay.
Yeah, it depends, because that's the distant time that you can often start pushing for longer in the water.
Swimming at 3 degrees, obviously in my head, seems very, very different from swimming in 10, 11 degrees. And obviously, you know, relative to the time one might spend in each. But is there a tangible progress between training at such a low temperature to how long you then can sustain in something a bit milder? Or do you need to train longer in one in order to sustain one, if you see what I mean?
I don't know that there's a graph as such, and individuals are all very different. I know people expect me to be happier swimming for longer, like multiple hours at 10 and 11 than I am. But for me, once I get to, 14 degrees is like a magic number, and it will then get much easier for me to build my distance. So it's about the time and the distance you're covering in that water. So you don't go as far in cold water, obviously. So your swims, you'll get cold very quickly. And the pain of the cold can be more severe, more intense. But once you start doing distance, you do get cold, but this is much slower. It's a different sort of cold because it happens more gradually.
Mm. Yeah.
But we talk about this, and we mustn't forget, some people get hypothermic in British seas, even in the summer, and that's their body and their acclimatisation and what they're used to. Mm. And we've got to remember it's all relative, and the main message is about safety and making sure that people swim within their limits. And there are times that you need to push it, like doing English Channel solo or any other big marathon, and an ice mile or a nice 0 kilometre race, but you've got the safety around you. You've got people there, you've got facilities, you've got heated changing rooms, you've got medics there, you've got saunas. It's about safety being number one in all of these events and these individual swims.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's your preferred method of warming up then? Is it just quite simply just lots and lots of layers and a hat and a hot drink? Or do you have a magic formula for someone who's been doing it so long?
That is pretty much the essentials, plus I'd say a windproof jacket or a sports cloak or something like the red changing robe or sports, dry robe, whichever you've got. That's essential. However, my preferred method, I've been lucky enough to have travelled a lot of the world ice swimming and competed in the world championships in Murmansk in Russia twice. And personally, I don't think there's any better way of warming up when you've pushed yourself to your limit. And they put your hands and your feet in buckets of cold water, but you're so cold, they feel okay, don't feel particularly cold. And then at the same time, they're putting hot, wet towels around your kidneys, around your groin, your neck, your armpits, and they keep changing them every few minutes. And then the water will start to feel cold, and they'll be looking at you, talking to you, looking on your eyes all the time. And then as you start to get a little bit warmer, you'll get rid of the buckets of cold water, and then they'll say you're okay and you can go into the next stage, which is into the sauna. And to me, that's the least painful and the quickest way of warming up. You shouldn't go straight from the cold swim straight into the sauna. That can be dangerous. And never, never get into a shower. That's the absolute worst. Yeah. But if you're in a warm recovery room and they're doing this treatment to you, to me, it's the best. And I'm a big fan of the saunas. Again, don't get in straight from cold water and don't get into the sauna too hot. But it's very popular.
Yeah.
And personally, it's my favourite way. You go to the World Championships and there's always saunas there.
But does that mean there's sort of rows of people at the Ice World Championships? In my head, I've got sort of rows of people all standing in buckets with their feet and hands in buckets, and people, running like, must look quite extraordinary to someone who doesn't know what's going on.
Yes, yes. In extreme temperatures. We didn't have that in France. We didn't need it in France. But there were, I think, 3 or 4 saunas at different temperatures you could go into. And most people, once they had got over the worst of their after, would go in there. Yes.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah.
God, I mean, this word, and I don't mean to scoff. I'm only scoffing because it's like superhuman strength for me. It's like I'm talking to Superwoman, which in my head you are, to be able to.
No, definitely not.
Well, that's the only reason I scoff, is because it's just incredible. I mean, it's astonishing, and it feels so alien to me as a swimmer, those sort of temperatures. Yet, you know, it's growing exponentially in popularity, and you know, to see people like you absolutely endorsing and smashing it, you know, it's incredible. It's wonderful to see. So let me ask you, what then? You talked briefly earlier about your joining a triathlon club so you could swim in the open water. But do you have any early memories of swimming open water that sort of fostered that desire to I suppose join the triathlon club or something like that? Is there a memory you can think of?
As I said, my parents were both teachers and we used to go caravanning on summer holidays, and I do remember being taken to lots of lovely places and trying to get in the water if there was a lake or a bit of sea. I also spent a little bit of time living in East Sussex and used to try and swim there. I remember wanting to go to swim in the winter in the sea, and my mum quite telling me that no, that isn't what you do. She's not a swimmer. She doesn't really like, she does get in with me sometimes, but she's not a natural swimmer, doesn't naturally like the water. I also remember we went to Norway once in the field, and my brother and I went swimming, and there was glaciers coming into it, and it was amazing. It was very cold, but I remember we both thought it was amazing.
Wow.
So yes, wow. We dipped a little bit and made the most of opportunities on holiday, really.
So was that's incredible. So was the ice, I think the ice swimmer was in you from a very young age then, based on that memory?
Possibly.
Yeah. And your brother, did he turn his attention to sort of ice swimming later in life, or was that not?
No, he's done different things and bits of adventure. He's more of a mountaineering person, doesn't do it anymore, used to do quite a lot.
Both have that sort of spirit of adventure. So that's a lovely segue. So what does open water swimming mean to you now? Whilst a Woman of the Year last year, nominated this year. And how has it changed, I guess, from those early Aspire Channel Relay? Can you sort of chart that? Because clearly ice swimming was always within you, even as a child, as we just talked about.
Yes, I've just continued the path where I can, a journey, looking for new things to do, looking for opportunities. I'm quite eager to seek out new challenges, adventures, and if I get offered something, I'll usually try and find a way to make it happen. So it's sort of built up over time, and yes, I'm lucky enough to be in some ways where I am now, in others not. But yes, I feel hugely honoured to be secretary for the International ISA Global Board. And I'm chair, I've been chair for a long time now for ISA Great Britain. Mm. And I was inducted into the Ice Swimming Hall of Fame in 2019. So I'm really honoured and privileged to have been given those opportunities, and I enjoy them. I think some of the story hasn't all been lucky for me though. So in 2018, I tragically lost my son, my only child, in a matter of days since he started university. And that really is the worst thing in the world. It breaks your heart into millions of pieces that you never recover from. And every day is a challenge, but swimming and friends is the way I've found a way to keep going, really. So swimming has a different meaning to me now. And it's an integral part of my life. Whatever shape that might take, I can't see it ever not being part of me. It's what makes me, and it helps me keep that going.
Gosh, Kate, I'm so sorry. You and I have a parallel in that. I lost my first son in very different circumstances. And the water was even more of a pull, was even more of a draw. And that's what's ultimately led me, I guess, to where I am now in terms of embarking on marathon swims to raise money for a charity closely related to our circumstances. But I empathize 100% with you on that. But again, it's this, for me, it's the idea of the water always drawing you and having a sort of healing capacity. And I think there's something about the way the water supports us and holds us. That allows us to process things, whether it be, you know, the worst possible grief and trauma. Do you identify with that idea of the water supporting us, perhaps?
Definitely. You're at one with nature, you're in that water. And yes, if the weather gods are against you, you might not be able to get in the sea, or floods, the pollution, whatever. But actually, when you're in there, it's a different feeling. It's hard to explain. But you've got the water all around you. You feel it. You feel its mood. You feel what the weather's doing around you. It's just completely different to being on land.
Mm. I've often talked in the podcast with other guests about this idea of surrender. And in the water, one has to surrender to the moment, because we are present, and, you know, the sea state can change at any time. And that's something we all have to surrender to. And also in your case, you have to surrender to the cold. And that's often, I feel, holds a mirror up to life, where we have to surrender to our circumstances as well. Does that echo with you at all?
Mm.
Yeah. Well, I can't imagine how difficult that's been for you. And I'm truly sorry for your loss. There's also an element I find with certainly distance swimming. There's an element of pain, obviously, and especially when you're swimming in cold water. There's an element of almost purgatory. Again, that feels quite cathartic. Does that, I guess, not for me who doesn't swim in the cold water like you do.
Hmm.
Does that resonate?
I'm not quite sure. In the same way, I think pain, you accept it and you get to know those feelings of numbness and at what stage they occur during a swim, and also those telltale signs of when you've had enough.
Mm.
So you've got to listen to it. And yes, you do. You expect it, really. It's like if you do an ultra marathon swim, you know your shoulders are going to ache at some point, but you know you might have little demons popping in your mind trying to tell you to stop, and you don't want to stop. So there is, I'm not a believer that swimming is more mental than it is physical. I definitely disagree with that. Okay. But there is a mental element to it, definitely. Yeah. A significant one, but not the majority.
It sounds like you obviously you love to train, which is music to my ears, because I often prefer the training to the actual event itself.
Mm.
And some people are more end game driven, should we say. I know I'm process driven, and that's where I get my most enjoyment. So actually, by the time the event comes around and I do it, you know, in my head, I've already completed it even before I've started it, regardless of the outcome.
Mm.
Do you identify with process product driven in terms of how you just articulated the mind and body not being?
I'm quite strict with myself on training, yes, and I will have quite a training plan, and I'll want to know that I've done X number of cold swims at X temperature or ice baths for so long, or to give me that confidence that I know I can do it, performing well in a swimming pool. For distance, I want to know I've done so many 6-hour swims in that season before I take something big on, so in a back-to-back. So preparation to me is critical. I wouldn't say it's all process, but preparation and having ticked the boxes that I had deemed myself pretty necessary.
Mm.
And those are sort of the same that I've devised. It's also having spoken to lots of people. I mean, obviously I've got a lot of friends all around the world, very good swimmers, many of whom that you've had on your podcasts, and, you know, we chat to them and, you know, you share ideas.
I guess what I'm also asking is, do you get just as much from the training as you do the outcome of an event?
They're different. I think you have to enjoy your training to get to the start line of that event, because if you're not putting it into the training, you wouldn't be confident at the start. And I think finishing the event is critical. Mm. So last year, I was attempting to swim the Gibraltar Straits with Paul Georgescu and some others. Paul's was Man of the Year. So we were there along with an Australian girl, Fiona, who had just got a Guinness World Record being the youngest person to swim North Channel.
Oh, wow.
And another Romanian. And we were under a lot of time pressure to get across. We were going, we were flying, and we'd done with it. The current was behind us, but in 1 hour 40, we'd done 9 kilometres of the 15. And then the fog came down. And it was still on, it wasn't immediately over us, but there's a big thick fog bank over in Morocco on the coast. The new Moroccans ordered us out of the water, and that was absolutely gutting. It's one of the rare times I haven't finished a swim. So to me, finishing the swim is really important.
Yeah.
As well as the cost, because it's, if yeah. I haven't got a sponsor, you know, how are you going to do the swims? They're really expensive these days. So I wouldn't necessarily agree with about it being all about the training and not the event itself.
I guess that question is for someone like me, who hasn't done nearly as many events as you have. That's how I'm processing my training. I mean, obviously, and we're all different. I guess as time goes on, and perhaps I add more events to my calendar, that will of course change. Because as you rightly say, someone like you expect to finish an event. Of course you do. Yeah.
And well, I don't think you ever take it for granted. You must always think positive. You must have those thoughts. Like if you're doing a channel swim, of picturing you landing, picturing you walking up that beach, or when I went down the Danube, you know, touching the pontoon at the end, you've got to have in your mind that vision of what you think it's going to be like, and keep, when times get tough during that swim, you keep going back to it. Remind yourself why you've wanted to do it, what it means to you, what that finish is going to look like.
Yes, and they're very important visualizations, because they carry you through the training, of course. But I, in my head, I've given myself a slight buyout clause, in so much as if I've done the training, I know I should be able to complete the swim. So hopefully, in my head, if I don't complete the swim, it won't be through any fault of my own. And there is a surrender to that, and there's an acceptance of that. And as someone correctly pointed out, I'm not actually committing. Actually, if someone pointed out to me, they said, well, actually, maybe you're just not fully committing in that regard, because you're allowing yourself to fail.
I don't give myself get out bits, no. But in any swim, and I say this when I'm an event director role as well, if you're told to get out, if you're told to stop, you have to do it. I mean, when we were told to get out in Morocco, we stopped. They explained what it was. There was, you know, there's no argument. You can't keep going, or they're not going to take you back in. You've got to get out. The minute you touch that ladder, game over.
Exactly.
And, you know, in ice swim, if there's a reason we stop somebody, if whether I'm helping somebody, watching them try and do an ice mile qualify, an ice mile event, or when I'm event director at the GB Championships, if we're stopping somebody, there's a reason for it. And, you know, we're very strict. They stop then and they get out, or they won't be swimming again.
Yeah.
You know, then it's safety, and it's being fairness to all the other competitors as well.
Yeah.
So whilst I don't give myself, I'm very hard on myself, and I don't let myself get out, let myself get out of training early. I won't, you know, any of that. But, you know, I try to push any thoughts out of my head of not finishing, but that's the way I approach it. And then if you're told to get out, you've got to, but I don't certainly have any thoughts of giving myself any get out of jail cards.
So Kate, what would you do if swimming was taken away from you, if the act of swimming, so not even cold or warm water, if you couldn't swim, what would that do to you and maybe your mental health?
Well, that's a very good question, because that is something that nearly happened to me, that I faced that dilemma. So in the middle of COVID, I got diagnosed with a brain aneurysm. And I had some choices to make. I was told it was borderline to have major surgery on. If I'd been in a different country, I wouldn't even have had that option. So it was awful. I mean, I was told that I couldn't ever go ice swimming again. And I was also told I probably couldn't do marathon swimming again, potentially possibly in the tropics or somewhere it's really hot. But so, and I also couldn't work maximum effort in a swimming pool. So I could poodle up and down, but I probably couldn't train as I do. And to me, that was devastating. What could I do if I couldn't swim? How could I cope without Daniel if I wasn't able to swim? So I managed to get a lot of advice, a lot of international advice from doctors and from friends who are doctors. And in the end, I opted for the major surgery, which was high risk. There was a chance that I wouldn't pull through at all. And there was a chance of a stroke, quite a high chance. But luckily, it went well. And I actually ended up having the operation very soon after diagnosis. And I actually went into hospital the day of the highest number of COVID admissions that we ever had throughout the pandemic. So it was a very scary time. Took a long time to recover. Took a long time before I could get back and swim. I had to wait 4 months for another scan to make sure it worked. It has worked. And since then, I completed my ICE7. And I did a lot of marathon swims last summer, got my triple crown of open water and amongst other swims. So I'm grateful to all the surgeons that had faith in my swimming, agreed to I could swim again afterwards. And obviously thank for them for making the surgery be successful and allowing me to swim, because without that, I don't know what I'd have done.
Yeah.
Back to hiking. I've done hiking and trekking in the Himalayas. And I'd been told, no, it's too high. You can't go anywhere remote. You can't go to altitude. I said, well, I could go skiing. No, you're not going above 1,000 meters. It's like, I can't hike. What about kayaking? I said, well, yeah, but you can't really go anywhere too remote. And I have this adventurous spirit in me. So it's like, well, if I can't go hiking, I can't go up mountains, I can't go skiing, I don't know what I can do. And a big part of that was coping to live without Daniel.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the story there.
That's a lovely story. Like one's coping mechanisms that you find quite quickly with grief, and you anchor onto them quite quickly. And if the danger of that being taken away from you is severe, which in your case obviously was, I can't imagine how that must have been really terrifying, really terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you for sharing that story. So let me ask you, open water swimming, to some extent, has always had a degree of fear factor for me, which I always say is the reason why some people might find it quite addictive, because you're facing some sort of a fear. Do you see that in yourself at all? I mean, especially with ice swimming, I know that you are very, very risk aware. But is there a memory or a story that comes to mind that makes you kind of realize that you were sort of close to the edge?
I think you've always got to have that healthy respect. My toughest swim ever was my ice zero in China. And yeah, wind chill was -23. Oh. That was the absolute toughest. And I also think that for the vast majority of people, swimming a zero is always going to be a slower swim, because the water gets to your muscles aren't as effective. So you're actually in longer than you would normally be. I would never have done that without a safety team that I knew and I had 100% faith in. I had with my partner was there. It was the Chinese event organisers, ambulance doctors, but I also had Russian friends there. One of them whose wife designed the recovery process rewarming that I described earlier. So I had total faith in them. And so that was by far my hardest. I think, but generally in terms of fear, it's more about having a very healthy respect to all forms of water. Anything can happen. You never know what's around the corner, as I found out hard way with Daniel. But it can be you just get cramp. It could be, if you're somewhere new and riptides, you've got to be aware of. It could be just exhaustion. It could be hypothermia. It could be a whole manner of things. And of course, these days you've got to worry about other boat users and watercraft, particularly jet skis. So healthy respect wherever you are.
Mm. So how you said that swim in China was your hardest.
Mm.
Could you describe it for us? Because to me, the idea of even inhaling air that temperature, it's unbelievable.
So I always think that when it gets to about -12 degrees, which is the temperature, all the hairs in your nostril freeze. To me, personally, that's when it's properly cold. And I have swum when it's -30. And it's, so things are different then. Wherever you're getting in and out, it's usually a pool cut out of the ice. You'll have to make sure there's insulating tape around the ladders, for example, so your hands aren't freezing to them unless they're wood. Your Crocs, you leave them on the side, they might freeze in place. So somebody got some water to pour over them the minute you get out. But for China, we went there and we flew over and they lost all our luggage. So we landed, met our Russian friends at Harbin right near the border. We then had to go to a decathlon in the city to get all the kit. I always travel with my essential swim kit in my hand luggage, hat, costume, goggles, earplugs. For the first time and only time I've ever put my dry robe into my luggage, it was disappeared. My partner Rory absolutely objects to flying wearing one, but I always do now again. So we went to Decathlon, but the Chinese people are generally not as tall as us, so it's very difficult to find thermals and things to fit us. We got to the till and they refused to take a card. So our good Russian friends paid cash, and we had to go to a cash point to get cash to pay them back, then rush to a train and get a 12-hour train, overnight train to the venue. And there was also jet lag. So when I got to China, yes, it was. I was tired. I didn't have all the kit. I had to borrow Crocs that were far too small to tie down. Somebody lent me a dressing gown that was sort of not much below my waist. So there was a lot of things that were adding to it. And there was a lot of disagreements at the event as to how many lengths we were going to swim. A Russian friend, very fast swimmer, also did the mile. And it was just getting that agreement and toing and froing and calling us back for extra medical checks. So it was all these stresses going along. And I was out there to actually try and see if we'd get China get an ISA event. This wasn't an affiliated swim with any other organisation, but it was trying to see if in future we could perhaps get an ISA event there. So I was sent out for that as well. It was the only get in. I'd had swum the previous day in the competition and done quite well. I'd swum in 0-degree water a few times and competed in it now. But when you're doing that, it feels like 2 ice kilometre swims rather than 1.5. Obviously it's over, it's 1,609 metres minimum. But you felt, I lost count of the number of lengths. There was some people in the crowd who thought I should turn and keep going right at the end and couldn't really realise why I was getting out. And then when I got out and rewarmed, I came out into this really freezing cold, minus 23 air, to find a lot of TV cameras right up with the microphone right by my mouth saying, oh, yeah, da-da-da-da-da. Can you give us an interview? So I'm doing that. Then the Russian friends came back, and we've got to go. We've got to go. The minibus is waiting. So then I got bundled in. The only seats in the minibus was right at the back, and the heater didn't work. And we're at the back, and there's ice on the inside of the windows. And when you've just done an ice here, that is the last thing you want. And then, as anybody who's been cold water swimming knows, that it affects your bladder, and then you want to go to the toilet soon after you've rewarmed. So after a little while, I said, look, can we stop the van? I need to go to the toilet. No, we're going to be late. I said, I'm not joking. I need you to stop. So they went for about another 45 minutes to an hour. And then the Russians decided they needed some alcohol. So they stopped in the service station. I thought, great. So I leapt out the minibus. I said, where are you going? I said, don't worry, I'll be back. I'll be back before you've got your vodka. Fine. So that, I was quite happy for that stop. And then things were better, more comfortable on the trip. We kept going for another couple of hours, thinking that we were going to be going to a nice hotel and being put up. But it was quite an adventure because the Chinese authorities had this plan for us, and we had to go to a different competition. We knew that. There was a tour of events we were going to. We get to this place, and I said to Rory, I said, this looks a bit like a train station now. I said, I don't know about a hotel. And lo and behold, all of a sudden, even our Russian friends thought they were going to a hotel. We suddenly got given a train ticket and told to get on an overnight train to the next city where we were met at like 4 a.m. So, yes, it was one time in my life. I'm quite happy backpacking. I'm quite happy to not have the luxuries of life. But on that particular night, I was looking forward to a short journey, comfortable hotel, nice bed, sleep, but wasn't quite to be. So very memorable.
I'm slightly speechless because in my head, I'm thinking, hang on, when's Kate getting warm? You know, you get out.
Well,
and
I did warm. The Russians rewarmed me. But as soon as they deemed that I was ready, warm enough to get dressed in the sauna, which I was warm enough, but actually another 10 minutes would have made all the difference. It's like, put your layers on, straight outside. Now you've got an interview and now you're in the back of this freezing cold minibus. The Chinese were all very nice, all very helpful. It was, they did their best, and each event looked after us. And there was times they took us out for meals and made us very welcome. It was just the logistics, if you broke it down, from getting from one place to another and the timings of it. So, everybody did their best, but when you actually thought they did them, but the bits, the A to B, getting from places and the actual finer details, caused the journey to be as I've described.
God, and everything is infinitely harder when you're cold, but not just cold, minus 26 wind chill. I mean, I think that's like standing on top of a mountain. you know, in, I mean, it's, oh God, well, I salute you. That's a wonderful story. Wow. Gosh, where do I go from there? I mean, I can't fathom that. But someone once said to me, always remember that the water wants you, which I've always used, you know, on a, as a sort of training mantra, if you like. Does that idea ever come into your head when you're swimming in 0 degrees and there's a wind chill of minus 26 and, you know, you've got to get warm and go to another venue? Do you like, are you thinking, well, at least I'm in the water?
I try always, and when I'm coaching, I always say to think positive thoughts, warm thoughts. So don't think, oh, it's cold. Think of, if they're youngsters, like when I was training to swim the channel, it's like, think of maybe in a bubble bath, think of them in front of a fire, think of them having a hot chocolate, whatever it is. Think, or even if you're into sunbathing on, you know, beaches in the summer, think of that. Think of warm thoughts. Don't think of something negative. I've got a horrible journey. I don't know how I'm going to get there. Or rewarm is going to hurt. Don't think that.
Yeah. I think someone's given me that advice already, and I'm not sure how good I am at implementing that, but I'm certainly going to try. So what would be your ideal swim then? If you could swim anywhere right now.
I want to swim in Antarctica. That's my dream.
That's your dream. And what sort of temperatures might you anticipate then?
Zero. Just under, between -1 and +1, I would think.
And then the air temperature?
Freezing. Cold.
Oh, and there is...
Very severe. But I mean, yes. In Antarctica, it's difficult. You've got short weather windows. You've got currents. Hopefully you have a favourable current. It's very difficult to find still water out there. Yeah.
And there is something very romantic about that. I totally understand. As someone of your level of experience and expertise in those sort of temperatures, I guess that is, you know, that has to be a dream. I totally understand that. In the same way that for some people, you know, completing a 10K swim, it might be theirs within their limits. So if your ideal swim would be in Antarctica, if you could swim that tomorrow, great. But other than once you've achieved Antarctica, what would then be next for you within the sort of ice swimming realm? Because that there surely is no greater place.
Maybe doing an ice swim up a mountain somewhere exciting like the Himalayas. I don't know. But to balance it, I also, in the summer months, I like doing marathon swimming. So I've done an awful lot of big marathon swims now. I got my Triple Crown in August last year. I worked for Strell in Mexico in November and pioneered a swim around one of those islands. And I think for me, it's about trying to test new boundaries, not just in the ice, but in warmer water, do things that haven't been done before as well. Finding interesting swims, try finding a place that appeals to me. But swimming down the Danube hadn't been done. I was a bit nervous of the pollution, but to me, it appealed to me, the scenery of it, something different. Breathing on my left to see Romania, on the right was Serbia. So if whatever you choose to do, whether it be in the ice or in anywhere else, a marathon swim, 10K swim, it's got to be something that really grabs your interest. Because unless your heart is in it, unless you really want to do it, it's difficult to train and it's difficult to commit time, effort, resource to something that you're not got that buy-in.
Very, very, very wisely said. So that leads me on beautifully to my final question. Where was your last swim and how was it?
My last swim was yesterday at Andart Lake, just under 4 degrees, and it was lovely.
That's positively balmy for you. Okay, that was such a wonderful chat. I appreciate you coming on so much. It's making me cold sitting in my studio thinking about some of your swims. And I'm just amazed at your achievements. Thank you for coming on.
You're very welcome. It's been lovely to chat to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Kate, for your time and for speaking to me. I don't know about you, but I feel like I need a warm bath after hearing all that. And I can't imagine how it must have felt swimming in minus 26 wind chill. I mean, it's just awe-inspiring. Thank you, Kate, for coming on and sharing your story. And I wish you well on all your forthcoming adventures, whatever they may be. Thank you for listening, and I will be back next week with another episode. So until then, happy swimming.